Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Brem Phipps from Jordan, Montana, back on the show. We had him on last year. We got to know him. Super fun, great energy with this young man. He's a super hard worker on the water, very knowledgeable angler. And once again, this year, he's doing really, really well in the tournament scene over there in Montana. More notably, here just a few weeks ago in July, he and his tournament partner, Chris McFadden, won the Montana Governor's Cup. And for Brem, it's actually the second time he's won it here in just a handful of years. So really big deal and a great part of this interview. Great story there. So anyways, let's get to it here. We've got Brem Phipps and we're talking all things Montana walleye fishing. Let's get to it. We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest-grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra-lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. If you're going to be doing any boat rigging whatsoever this season, check out a complete listing of products at tkicnc.com. There you'll find lots of things, including the multi-purpose rod holders and their forward sonar pole mounting kits. These product designs specifically maximize your efficiency and reliability in the boat. This is why so many hardcore anglers, including tournament anglers, are turning to TKI to accessorize their boats. For a detailed look or in-depth tutorials, check them out on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram at TKICNC. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. New fishing regulations on Mille Lacs Lake in Minnesota have walleye anglers excited. To plan your next fishing vacation over there, check out the lodging options over at Chalet on Mille Lacs. They have all you need and more. I'm talking about multiple private shorelines, including a back channel where you can safely park your boat overnight, a great feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake. There's also a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience. With 5 bedrooms, 3 baths, that's 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multiple families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews online from past guests on the website or book directly at chaletonmillelacs.com. That's chaletonmillelacs.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Remind me a little bit, get me up to speed a little bit on your day-to-day program, if you will.
Yeah, so I worked for the highway department for 5 years now. And in June, we'd already fished a handful of tournaments. And my boss, he was very good, very willing to let me have the time off. And, I mean, none of this is possible without him. And just wasn't really fulfilled with it. And I told him, like, hey, I think I'm done. And he's like, all right, man. I said, I'll stick it out as long as you need me. Like, but I'm basically, like, I want to be done by July. He said, dude, just let me know when you want to be done and we'll make it happen. I said, well, like, maybe tomorrow will be my last day. He goes, all right, we'll do it. And so I actually I quit my job like 2 weeks before Gov Cup. And put in my 2 weeks and took vacation for the other, you know, my last 2 weeks, I guess. And kind of had time to focus on fishing. We had a tournament and we did not do well. And so that wasn't a great kicker to start off retirement. That's for sure. And rolling the Gov Cup, and it was just a answered prayer for sure. just a stressful, like, man, what am I going to do? Like, I live in Jordan and there's not a lot of jobs open here. And I just quit one of the better ones. Like, oh man, I better put in the work now. And so we got after it and put in a pile of hours and it all worked out. But so I'm actually I have a seamless gutter business now. And so just doing seamless gutters and fishing.
And that's your business or family business?
Yep. I've owned it for 7 years now. So
right on, man. You bet on yourself a little bit. That's a good, I mean, that's just, it's all good stuff, man. And remind me a little bit about, re-get me up to speed and get the listeners up to speed on sort of the landscape of the competitive walleye tournament fishing in Montana.
Yeah, so there's two circuits. There's the Montana circuit and the Fort Peck circuit. And the Montana circuit kicks off in May. And they have usually four, but it's down to three this year just because of a lake dried up and all kinds of things. And so there's two completely different tournaments, two completely different series, everything, different directors, everything's different. And so you're traveling. I think we had a tournament every weekend in June and then one every weekend in July. And so you're just traveling all over the state and just pickups just full of rods and gear. And you're just hoping you don't forget something at the next one. And I think I went a month and a half without staying a night in my house, just bumming around, bumming on a couch and staying wherever the tournaments were. And so it's very, and they're all very competitive. I mean, some of them, we only had 43 teams in this year, but you can bet money that those 43 teams are the ones that they're not just out there, you know, they're not your weekend warriors. They're getting it. You know, whenever they show up, like, oh crap, I'm going to have a heck of a weekend to compete with these guys. And it's like that every single tournament. It's never one you walk in like, oh yeah, this one's ours. Like, you know, what's the course record? Who's taking second? There's none of that. It's, oh my gosh, we're going to have to stick every fish this weekend. And so it's no days off whatsoever.
I love it, man. What's kind of been the story of the year? Tell me, give me up to speed a little bit on kind of the trendy things that are going on the reservoirs out west as far as finding and catching fish, what's hot, what's not. Give me a little bit of an update, a little bit of a breakdown.
Yeah, so the spring, it was like we've never really been very good live bait fishermen. Like, that's just, we've always struggled with it, especially on a jig. In the spring tournament, we actually won. It was on a jig and a minnow. Had to be a jig and minnow, had to be slow, and we had giant winds. I mean, like 45, 50 gusts, and then constant a 30, 35. I mean, you're standing in the bow, and you're just taking them over the front and getting beat up. And, I mean, you have to work so much harder on those fish. And just to keep a 3/8 ounce jig and a minnow in front of them, you know, finesse fishing them is a feat in its own. And then, I mean, that was all the way till June. You know, it's hard keeping bait alive once that water warms up, temperature warms up, and it's just a headache. And then luckily it switched, like right before Gov Cup, it switched to a jig and a worm. And I tried glide baits. I mean, I wanted a glide bait to work so bad. I always had one tied on, and I'd try it on fish every single day, and never once. It's like they've seen 2,000 of them, and they're never looking at another one in their life.
Is that what you think it is? Like the pressure? Because I feel like we're feeling that over here too. Like, man, the glide bait was just such a revolutionary thing here about 4 or 5 years ago, and now, I mean, it's a good way to catch some eaters, but jeepers, the big fish are stingy on them.
Yeah, it seems like everyone's getting so in tune with the live scope that those fish are getting a bait on their nose every single time. You know, before everyone's like, oh, I'll get within 10 feet of it and call it good. But now these guys are getting so good. It's on their nose every time. So you got to do something different and work it, you know, find the way that they're going to eat it. And I think they're just getting so smart. I mean, I hope not, because it makes it so much tougher. But that's just looking on the live scope. It's like, man, you guys have seen this game before.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, that's interesting, man. I think that is so interesting that, you know, anglers have always historically at the highest level had to be, you know, innovative and always like on the cutting edge. But I find that to be so interesting that it is that way, because we're dealing with fish, you know, their brain the size of a pea or whatever. That's like a big one.
and still getting outsmarted.
And yeah, they still can just be so stingy from one season to the next, you know, even, you know, day to day, hour to hour. But But no, I've been seeing you, man. I know you've had some really, really great finishes, and I kind of want to get into, you know, early in this conversation here, I want to get into the Gov Cup. I kind of want to hear the whole story, whatever you're willing to share, man, starting with, you know, how much pre-fish you had and how that went.
Yeah, so we had, like, that was, you know, it's the week after 4th of July. And so I had everything basically from the 4th to the 10th to pre-fish. And starting off, my fishing partner, Chris McFadden, he was at the dam doing a little family vacation. He's like, well, I'll be able to get a little fishing in the mornings, you know, while the kids are sleeping, and, you know, I'll have to go back and, you know, play in the afternoon. I was like, all right, that's fine. And I gave him some spots to try. And I was like, you try live bait. I'm going to try glide baits because I don't have any worms. I said, you try some worms up there and see if you can get anything. And luckily, he kind of found a little worm bite going on. And I went and beat my head against rocks with glide baits only. And we both put together a pretty good bag. It was like, this is nothing to, you know, win a tournament. And so then our teammates, kind of Andy and Sam Rose, we stay at their place, and they're very good fishermen, had a really good bite figured out. And same thing, like worms and jigs, like son of a gun. And then there's some leeches thrown in there. Then they were catching them on glide baits, but they had like a 55 pound average on the week. And I told McFadden, I was like, we're buying them in the Calcutta. Like, they are smoking us. Like, they're putting on a clinic right now. And they had it dialed, had color, bait, presentation. And we kind of knew where the fish were. And so we just stay away. Like, wouldn't even slide in there. Wouldn't do anything. Just, I went in, found them earlier pre-fishing, and just hoped. And Andy had them found on the other side of the lake in that same area. I was like, well, they're still there. You know, just hoping and praying that they stay. Like, just don't leave us yet. Like, just wait till Monday morning to leave. And so we stayed away and eliminated water and just kind of dialed in baits and basically struggled for a week straight, just hoping that we'd have something figured out by tournament time. Well, come Friday or Thursday night, because it's a Friday-Saturday tournament, we don't have anything figured out. So we're on our hands and knees begging Andy and Sam for some information, some help, and they give us their playbook. And I was like, well, you know, I have a little confidence going in. And so we used to go up to the Lake Ridge Friday morning of the tournament, and we're sitting there talking to the owner, and Eddie Mint goes, you want some minnows? There's been quite a few guys buying minnows. And we're like, I don't know, it's July, never used a minnow in July. We left our bait box back at the house. Like, can we use your flop box again? He's like, yeah, sure. We're like, okay. And so we grabbed his flop box, grabbed a couple dozen minnows, and off we went for the first day of Gov Cup. And McFadden's like, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. I've got more confidence in a minnow than I do a jig and a worm. I said, I'll go jigging a minnow. You go jigging a worm, and we'll work from there. And right away, we get out to our spot and pick up three big fish before the weigh boat even gets there. Like, we're sitting there just sweating. Like, what in the world? Like, hurry up. Like, we thought we were going to have to, because we were in the first flight, we thought we were going to have to go run down the weigh boat. And so,
can you only have three in your live well?
No, you can have five, but they were struggling, you know. And they're aggressive right now, and they're stressed out. And it's just one of those, like, get rid of this headache. Because at that point, he's in the back keeping those fish with weights on their fins and keeping water pumping to them. And I mean, I'm fishing by myself in the front, and he's like, where is that weigh boat at? And finally picked up the third one. I looked back, and there was the weigh boat. So we hurry up and go and drop those three. And then it was just like, that was all a minnow bite. And after that, it was the rest of the day. It was kind of on fire. And we ended up picking up a 32 and a quarter. And I lost it had to have been 33, 34 inch walleye. I mean, the mark was just ginormous. And pitched on with the big minnow, and she smoked like the most aggressive fish we saw all day. And I lost her, of course. And so I was, you know, a little heartbroken and throwing my little fit. And I turn around, pan the live scope over, like, oh, there's a big one, suspended pitch out there. There's a 32 and a quarter to end the day. I was like, well, I guess that one's all right then. I don't know, like, I'm not sponsored by those flop boxes, but those things are,
they're legit
money.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It was hot out, and I've never seen anything like it. If we would have had anything else, those things would have been dead. Those minnows would have been dead, and we would have been without them. And like, if it would have been for Eddie and those minnows, we would have gotten our butts kicked for sure. And so day two, we're prepped. We got that flop box all, you know, that ice block frozen. We got fresh water and a pile of minnows now. And we pull up, McFadden's like, what do you think? Think I should go to minnow? I said, no, you stick with the worm. I'll stick with the minnow, and we'll see if they're still going on minnows. And, oh, my goodness, he put on an absolute clinic for me in the morning. I think he had 4 or 5 to my 1. And I was like, yep, I've seen enough. Knocked my minnow off, put a worm on, and we go to catching them. But our biggest is like 28 and a quarter, and our smallest is 25. We have like 30 pounds on 5 fish at this point. And we're like, oh, this is not going to do it. Like, we got to find bigger fish. And then, of course, at that point, we were in a big white 219 Lund, and it, you know, it draws some attention. And, of course, we had the whole wall to ourselves the day before. Well, day 2, not so much. You could look down the shoreline, count about 15 boats. Mm. Like, oh, I guess we're not going to point hop all the way down like we had originally planned. Like, well, let's go. Like, let's just start pre-fishing then. Like, we've got nothing to lose at this point, you know? And we run to a spot that is kind of wind-drawn. And we just put down, and pretty soon we had 40 pounds in a matter of, like, 2 hours. And had kept that 28 and a quarter or half, whatever it was, from earlier that morning, and upgraded the other 4 for our 48 pounds on the day.
Dang, dude. I mean, that's the thing about, like, if you're not from there, those are the stories that are just so fascinating of, like, the quality of fish that are out there. I think most people can understand to some extent, you know, that, like, you're putting in a ton of work to get those bites, so it's not like you can just go to Fort Peck and, like, these 30 inchers just jump in the boat. So I kind of want to get into that, you know, get into the nitty gritty of some of that stuff, but man, there's just so much to be appreciated about that, you know, like what it takes to win, like you said, any of those like 40 boat tournaments, but much less the, you know, it's just so impressive to be able to do it in a big boat field. But you know, when you don't have like a lights out pre-fish, I think this is the thing that I want to have you talk about a little bit is like, I think a lot of people don't always understand that those people that are consistently like in the top 5 of really competitive walleye tournaments, it's not always a result of like a phenomenal pre-fish. And so I kind of want to hear sort of your explanation on this example, but even just like in your career as a tournament angler, when you don't have a really, really good pre-fish, what are just some of the things like in terms of your strategy or like what are some of your confidences and just how you know you're going to operate on day 1 or the first morning of a tournament on Fort Peck or anywhere? When you just haven't had a great pre-fish, like what are some of the things that you know you got to be prepared to do to put it together and not lose the tournament on day 1, if that makes any sense?
Yeah. Yeah. So our biggest thing, like McFadden is saying, is we don't have to win it on day 1. We just can't lose it. And so just knowing that, like, you got to be prepared to fail. Like, all right, if they're not going, we got to switch up. Like, we can't, just because this maybe worked a little bit in pre-fish or someone else was getting it to work, like that, him using a worm and me using a minnow, like one of us was going to fail, right? And if both of us are failing, like then it's back to the back of the boat and you start grabbing random stuff and using it, like whatever it takes, and just giving them something different and just keeping that attitude like we're going to get them. We might get our 5 bites the last hour, but we're going to get them. Mm-hmm. And the attitude is the biggest thing. Like luckily for me, my dad and McFadden, both my fishing partners the last couple of years, they're definitely the level-headed positive ones. They're the ones who are like, no, it's fine, we got it, like keep working, keep covering water, we'll get them. And I'm, you know, ADHD, I'm all over the place, like stressing no matter what. Like first 20 minutes we don't have 35 pounds, I'm like, uh-oh, this is, we're done, we're screwed. And they're like, no, we're fine, it's okay. And that's a big part of it, is having the right partner, having the right mindset, and just being prepared for, you know, the fail. And keeping your head right in it. Cause once, I mean, you see some of these guys in the wind and, you know, they start bickering with their partner, the wind's getting them, and they just explode. And that's their downfall.
Yeah.
And you have a good partner that you get along with, you can joke around with all day, keep it light, keep the humor good. And just like, well, let's try this. We haven't tried this yet. Or what about trying over here? So there's been quite a few times where like McFadden will take over driving and I'll be in the back retying. And he'll pull into a spot like, what in the world are we doing here? And pretty soon, boom, he pops a big one, or boom, there's a whole bunch of them. Like, okay, I guess I might have been a little more closed-minded than what I thought, because I guess we found them.
Yeah.
And so just being able to adapt to all those little things that matter is a big part of it.
TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. If you're going to be doing any boat rigging whatsoever this season, check out a complete listing of products at TKICNC.com. There you'll find lots of things, including the multi-purpose rod holders and their forward sonar pole mounting kits. These product designs specifically maximize your efficiency and reliability in the boat. This is why so many hardcore anglers, including tournament anglers, are turning to TKI to accessorize their boats. For a detailed look or in-depth tutorials, check them out on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram at TKI CNC. We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. New fishing regulations on Mille Lacs Lake in Minnesota have walleye anglers excited. To plan your next fishing vacation over there, check out the lodging options over at Chalet on Mille Lacs. They have all you need and more. I'm talking about multiple private shorelines, including a back channel where you can safely park your boat overnight, a great feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake. There's also a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with 5 bedrooms, 3 baths, that's 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multiple families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews online from past guests on the website or book directly at chaletonmilax.com. That's chaletonmilax.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Unpack how many denials from like target fish, like tourney grade fish, are you going to take before you make some of those adjustments? Like, what does that really look like for you?
So usually, I mean, we've got, like, I always keep my rods, whatever I'm, like, 4 rods sometimes up in the bow, just right behind me, locked and loaded, you know, with a different glide bait, worm, minnow, whatever it is. And so you see a big mark out there, you try your, you know, if you're feeling confident, you're swinging good, you get it on her, she doesn't go, like, all right, try the glide bait. She doesn't go on that. Your partner's got something else. You turn the boat. All right, you try her. See if you're swinging a little different. And if they don't go, then it's like, all right, either that's a super negative fish or we're doing something wrong. And so usually after the third fish, if they don't go and they look right and they should have eaten, then it's like, all right, it's time to switch up major now. And then you go to, usually Dad and McFadden are the ones changing. That way I can kind of focus on driving and fishing my confidence baits. And they'll, you know, they're pretty good about, like, we'll run whatever you want, you just let us know what and we'll do it. And so that's super nice to have that, you know, be able to do that with those guys, and they're willing to fail for you and make that sacrifice so you can fish a confidence bait and keep it going. And but yeah, usually 3 fish, if they don't go on your confidence bait or what's been working, it's like, well, time to start adjusting somehow.
How often would you say, like, an adjustment to the presentation to sort of unlock the code of getting bit is the answer to success on the day versus sticking with a confidence bait but just cycling through more fish to find the five that will bite. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably not a very good guy to ask on that because like before GovCup, they wanted a longer worm, right? And so it wasn't a whole worm, but wasn't a short worm. It was like 3/4 of a worm. It's like, okay, super weird. So you try a full worm, didn't like it. Try a short worm, didn't like it. Try a 3/4 worm, they'd eat. Like, what in the world? And so you keep trying that, and, you know, a couple would go, some wouldn't. And I don't know. It's just a lot of, yeah. I'm not a very good guy to ask on that one.
It's not like, I don't feel like there's probably like any one particular silver bullet answer for anybody to say to that question, but I'm just curious on like personal preference of like, but you answered it perfectly. Like if you have a handful of rods right by you, you know, you have a couple of confidence baits on the ready, you know, just kind of shows that you're a versatile angler. Like you're not going to get stuck in a rut of like, well, I got bit yesterday on this one bait, so now I'm done. I'm done with that decision making. I know they'll eat that. And like, no, you keep an open mind, I think, is huge. Absolutely.
Yeah, we do cover a pile of water too. And I think sometimes I probably go too fast. I mean, it's just that like, oh, there's gonna be one. And McFadden, he's pretty good about like, well, there's one laying in the bottom. Like, well, she won't eat, you know. And he pitches out there, catches a big one, like, okay, I guess I ate my words there. And so that changes everything. Like, oh, crap, no, we probably better slow down a little bit because we're driving over fish. Or, you know, like even GovCup, he was fishing one, and I looked, like, she doesn't look that big. Like, in my head, I was like, nah, she's not going to go. You could hear my beep, beep, because I'm taking it off anchor and going, oh, let me try this one more time. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, come on, let's go. We've got a lot of ground to cover here. And of course, like a 28 or 29 inch. I was like, I knew I was going to eat those worms.
That's a good thing though. That's a good thing. Now, do you guys, when you're running as a team, do you guys have, are you guys both up front just working together off of one unit or do you got a guy on a pole in the back?
We have two guys in the bow on poles. And that way we're both on the same page going. We're set on 100 feet, looking both ways, covering 200 feet at a time. And then, like, if I'm working a fish, he can start panning for another one, or he can be working one at the same time. And we just found that's the best way for us. I mean, my dad and I tried we kind of figured this out. We tried the whole one guy in the front, one in the back, but the wind blows, you can't hear them. Then we tried one guy in the front, or both guys in the front with one pole. And then it was just, like, too much quality time, too tight a space. And so I was like, let's put two of them up here, and that way we have a little more distance from each other. And then it was... That was much better. That was probably the best decision we've ever made, is going to two up front.
That's interesting, man. I like hearing that, though. You know, because the guys that are just on the trolling motor, kind of the one-man band, you know, and then you got the co-angler, so to speak, in the back. Some of these guys are just, you know, unstoppable with that setup. But there's definitely still a time and a place for the pole mount or just whatever works for each individual person. It's almost like you can't judge.
Yeah. And there's some guys that, you know, we don't need two guys up here with the live scope. You know, this is a one man show. And I'm thinking, you know how many times Dad and Chris have saved my bacon? Like, goodness, I would be nothing without those two, like bailing me out, having their own pole over there or calling one like, hey, I got a big one out here. Like, you're on fire. You're on the roll. Take her, like, spin the boat, get how you need to get her. I'm not going to, you know, ruin that first look. Like, you get her. Okay. And you get a 30-31, and, or you're working one suspended and that other guy can watch her, and you, cause it's been like right in their nose. It has to be on it. And so you're all right, stay on her, and you're working that fish and you're just overlooking at their live scope, and you can drop yours and you're handless, you know, like those troll motors guys don't need a guy for that. Cause they got their feet, I guess, but it's convenient having that other guy like, oh, she's going, or she left. So, you know, what's going on all the time, even if you aren't looking.
I like kind of hearing what your approach or just some of the things that you are mentally prepared with when you go into day one of a tournament like this, when you didn't have like a super confidence building pre-fish, but day one's a total success. Did it feel like you figured some things out that were rock solid, or did, you know, like what were the vibes and what was the strategy, like the thought process? What were the conversations like? What were some of the meaningful things that you guys were discussing going into day two?
Yeah, so we knew we were going to be last flight out. And of course, like I said, that pickup stands out super bad. And so we figured there was going to be a little more traffic on those spots than what was there the day before. And we kind of knew there was big winds. We knew what direction or which side those fish were going to be on, where they might be holding in case things don't go the way we thought. And we just said, like, all right, if we get to our spot and it's, you know, loaded with boats and there's people in there and the fish aren't going or they're not big enough, like, we're just going back to pre-fish, essentially. Like, we're going back looking for that odd water that no one's hitting. You know, we're going to hit the stuff that people aren't getting at all, hitting all day long. And because, you know, like, that's our thought. It's like, well, we always do our best during pre-fish. Like, why don't we do that more often? Cover more water, cover weird water, and eliminate, you know, start eliminating that stuff. And so we kind of had, like a 5-mile stretch of shoreline, north and south side, that was good. You know, that was where we got them all the day before. And so, like, all right, we'll just point hop all this stuff on both sides. There's like a total of 14 points. Like, we got to be able to get 5 fish out of there. And that's whenever we got there, and there was about 20 boats sitting down the shoreline. We're like, okay, so there goes all those active fish. Like, they're all going to be picking them off. And, you know, had people come in and try butting us out of our spot. And it's just like, well, whatever, we'll go somewhere else and start pre-fishing. And just keeping that level head whenever, you know, your fish are 25s instead of 29s and 30s like you were wanting. And just like, all right, we'll get them. It's early. And just being able to go pre-fishing and not stick to that one spot. Like, well, I know there's fish here, you know, and you end up with 25 pounds instead of 50 because you won't move and won't go see new water. And so our biggest thing is just like, don't be afraid to try something new during tournament. Like, it's never too late to learn. And so we had really only had that 5-mile stretch. That's what we were banking on. We didn't even pre-fish it really, because we're like, oh, there's fish there. And then day two, we're like, uh-oh, like, this is all we had. And McFadden's like, got anything else? Like, one spot. I was like, well, I guess we're going there. And luckily it was stacked with big fish.
Tell me a little bit of your, describe to me like what it means when they're stacked in an area. How big of an area and how many fish got to be in there for you to just feel like, whoa, dude, like, we hit it right time, right place. This is the deal. They're stacked.
Yeah, so stacked might be a little dramatic, especially for Fort Peck, because there's no, you know, you hear people talk about wolf packs and all this stuff, and Fort Peck doesn't have those wolf packs in the spring and fall sometimes, but in the summer, I mean, we pull into a spot, and there was, I mean, like, pull in, we both picked up or found a big fish to work, and then keep going. There's 3-4 of them. McFadden lost one, and he's like, man, I think that was a pike. And I pan out there. I was like, I don't know. It doesn't, like, there's 3 of them. They look good. And 3 big walleye together is pretty rare. Like, I don't hardly ever see that on Fort Peck. And I was like, that's, I don't know. Those don't look like pike. And I pitch out there, catch a 30 out of there. And I was like, son of a gun, those are walleye. And so they would just keep working that stuff. And usually I only make one pass and then I'm on to the next. And but we worked that, I think, 4 or 5 different times and picked up, you know, either picked one up or lost one every pass. And so maze, like, yeah, stacked to be like 5 or 6 fish would be for Fort Peck. I feel like that's pretty stacked.
Yeah.
On a point.
Yeah, I think that's a great clarification to make. And it's fair. Like, the when you describe it, I'm thinking like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. I would consider that stacked as well. Like, the thought that you could catch like 5 or potentially catch like 5 world-class walleyes off of one point, essentially, or one piece of structure, even if it is 1.5 miles long or whatever, right? But like, if your trolling motor stays in the water and you have the potential to catch like 5, you know, 8 to 11 pound fish, like, you know, that's unbelievable. I would consider that stacked, but I still, but they are, you know, articulating it that way, I think does paint that picture a little bit more properly, because, you know, the average walleye angler that's never been to Fort Peck or anything like it, you know, you're thinking like a school of eaters, right? That's what stacked means, you know, yeah. What I mean? But like, so I think it's like, it's just all relative, but I would still consider that stacked. I'm all about it. I think that's awesome that, you know, and fishing the fresh water, like, talk to me about that. Like, cause this is sort of an interesting thing that I feel like talking to tournament anglers is becoming more and more of an idea in my head that makes sense to, that like, you know, historically, or even, you know, for somebody like me, that would be like considered a novice, like I've fished 2 walleye tournaments in my life, you know, like ever, maybe three. So I'm nobody. But in my head, I would be thinking, if I had no advice and no one ever talked, like if someone just said, hey, let's go fish a walleye tournament, in my head, I would go pre-fish thinking, I want to find the best spot on the lake. Like the best spot that maybe, and maybe I'm smart enough to know not to look at a community spot, because that would probably, you know, on a tournament day, that might not be productive. Like, what's the best spot I can find that's not, you know, a community spot? But you're, I feel like anymore talking to you guys that are scoping specifically, you don't even need to find a really, really good spot. In fact, if you can find a spot that's so awful, not another boat would ever look into it, it's worth looking into.
Yeah.
Because it's just like quiet water, and you don't need it to be a spot that's desirable for a lot of fish. It needs to be suitable for the right fish and just barely enough of them. Like, how do you articulate that when you're just looking for areas, you know, that's like quiet water? Like, what is sort of your criteria? Is it just got to pass the eyeball test? You've never seen anybody on the horizon over there for like 3 days, so let's just go look. Like, I'm just sort of curious how you sort of think that through, or whatever you're willing to share there.
Yeah, so I think for me, it's usually finding in the area where the fish are, you know, that 5-10 miles, whatever it is, depending on the lake, obviously. And then, you know, if all those main lake stuff's getting hit, it's like, well, no one's been hitting this secondary, or no one's hitting this spot. Let's go check that out. You know, cause you're keeping eyes on everything. You're keeping tabs on who's there, what they're doing, and you know, how they're fishing it, what they're fishing it with. And she was kind of going in after them, be like, okay, you know, there's a lot of pressure here, but did they go deep? Did they go shallow? Did they go to the next point? Did they go down? Are they in the bay? You know what? And then it's that at that point, you're just dissecting it all over again. Like, all right, I know there's fish in this 5 miles. We just got to figure out where they went after all this pressure. And so that's kind of how I look at it, more so just because then I'm not, you know, like I was listening to that Jaden Wendell, and they were fishing stuff that I've, you know, that kid's got it figured out. And they fish stuff that I could never even imagine. Like, I can't even, I don't know how that kid's doing it, but he's got her dialed. Good for him. And so like, there's no way I'm pulling in there and doing what he's doing. No chance. And so I kind of try to stay away from all that. Like, I'm going to try figuring out a bite somewhere else and not that way just to keep me out of that situation.
The main lake points that seemed like, at least for starters, is that kind of always the deal for the Montana Gov Cup day one for everybody?
Yeah, it seems like in the last couple of years, it sure has been. Yeah, and then, but I think now everyone's, you know, at that live scope, same thing. Everyone's beating on those fish so much, especially like in the boundaries of Gov Cup, all that, you know, same thing, fish and memories for all these years. Such points have been so good. And it's one of those, like, you don't even look at it. Like this year, I think I maybe swung through there once, but I was like, everyone's going to hit this so hard. It's pointless for me to waste time because Every single person's going to live scope this. They're going to get a bait on them. And sure enough, there was, I don't think any weight came off of those main points that are usually good.
Yeah. So a couple years ago, you won it with your dad. How does it compare? Like I'm just talking about the fishing, not the emotional stuff, but like the fishing, you know, was there anything about maybe the pattern, maybe where the fish were at? The water levels on Fort Peck, like what were some of the fishing elements that you could say were, you know, different or adjustments to be made, things that we've maybe already or haven't mentioned?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, they had the spillway open. And I think, because I've never fished that stuff up by the spillway before in my life, and we hit it like 2 days before the tournament, and there was a bunch of fish, and they're like, well, I guess we'll check it out in the morning. And I think it had to do with that spillway being open. All those fish were, you know, following that water. And just because I think first through fifth all came from that same like 3 mile stretch. Like you could have seen it all from the dam. And so I think that had something to do with it because I fished it every year since. And, you know, quite a bit, like, you know, even just random days go over like, oh, there's got to be something here. Fishing memories, of course, like, oh, they were here one time. Yeah, they haven't been there since. And so that's the only thing we can think of. And this year was completely opposite side of the boundary. And I mean, it was that year that Dad and I wanted to do was jigging wraps and that was like whenever Bioscope kind of first came out. Of course, it wasn't, not everyone had it figured out yet. And I mean, those things were tearing up anything you put in front of them. It was so much fun. And now you can't even keep a jig on these things' nose, and you walk them all the way to the boat and they just turn their nose and go the other way. And just the most finicky fish you've ever seen. So it's a complete opposite bite. And but it's so much fun, like a worm in a jig. That's a fun bite. Just keeping it on their nose, working them all the way up, and your success rate's about 10%. But I mean, what's a, you know, 32 incher following you up to the boat and doesn't he? That's not stressful at all. And one of our big fish on day two at Gov Cup, we were fishing it and I got kind of pushed in shallow because we've been like, I don't know, 15 to 25 feet is where we've been getting everything. And there was three boats coming, you know, one just pleasure fishing, you know, a man, a guy and his wife, not in the tournament, and then a couple tournament boats coming. And I was kind of on the inside there. And I was like, well, I don't want to be a jerk and bomb out through the middle of these guys and get out. I was like, I'll go shallow here and just run it out and see. And of course, pan in and there's a giant walleye sitting in 10 feet of water right on the weed line and some rocks. Mm-hmm. I was like, pitching there. And she just destroys it, a 30 and a half or something like that to end the day. And I was like, what in the world? Like, this is the craziest thing. Like, man, everything happens for a reason right there.
Yeah.
But then it makes you think, how many big fish did I miss in shallow today? Like, holy smokes, did I screw up? Because she just, like, no matter what you put in front of her, she was eating. And everything else, we're just finessing back to the boat and getting heartbroken. Like, I think we might have screwed up.
Yeah, dude. But that just leaves you hungry for the next time, man. It's like, you just got to get back out there. But, I mean, I'm sure you had all gas right to the end. But, like, at what point in time... At what weight did you have on day two, or at what point in time did you start feeling pretty good about it, or did you not at all?
Oh, not at all. Yeah, I was sick to my stomach driving back to the ramp with 48 pounds, like physically, because we went in a little early just because to make one of those, like, no, we're making sure we get what we got, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I look over McFadden and I said, I'm so sick to my stomach right now. Is he going to swing into another point and try upgrade? And I said, I don't know, but I'm about to throw up. Like, I do not like this feeling at all. And we talked to the weigh boats. We'd upgraded like 3-4 fish, right? Just boom, 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 like that. And I, the weigh boat, I saw that Jaden and his dad bomb into the weigh boat, and we had a big one in the box. And I was like, let's wait and see, wait for them to go, and then we'll go and we'll go after them and see what happened. And so we pull up. I said, those guys have big weight, because we knew they were going to need like 60 pounds to get us, right? And the one guy goes, oh, yeah, they have a really nice bag. I was like, my stomach just sang. Like, that is not what I wanted to hear. And I said, like, 60 pounds good? And this guy used to fish tournaments. He's a dang good fish man. Oh, no, not that good. He has nothing like your guys. He's like, oh, you cannot do that to me. He said, I'm going to have a heart attack.
Oh, that's interesting, man.
And that was like the end of, like, we were, I think after that we were going back. And so we knew that they, you know, they would have to have a, like 12 pound upgrade on five fish at that point. Like, all right, we had got the guys who were in third, and then we were just like worried about the guys in second. Cause I don't think they had nearly as much pressure or, like, you know, other fishermen fishing their stuff. And I was like, man, if they get on the right pod without any pressure, like, they could do it pretty easy. Like, all they need is a 55 pound bag to get us right now. And of course, they're the last boat in, and I'm so sick, my stomach waiting in that bay. And finally, a text comes through, and we're up at the boat cleaning up, and we're just sitting there like, oh no, what is going to happen? And they brought their weight card in with someone else, and they sent my buddy a text like, they only had 33 or 35, whatever it was. And oh yeah, we might have did a little hooping and hollering after that.
Like, dude, winning the Gov Cup has got to be, that's like top of the mountain. It's your second time.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. My brother-in-law, he actually bought us in the Calcutta. Oh. And so after the whole time, said, do not buy us. Like, I don't care if we're catching 70 pounds a day. Do not buy us. He goes, I don't care. I'm buying you whatever it takes. I was like, you're an idiot. I said, do not. He goes, no, that way I can hold it over your head forever if you don't win. I said, no, because I'm telling you right now, don't do it. And so he ended up buying us. And then he doesn't fish at all. But he was, you know, he got into it. He was pumped. He was texting me after day one, like, dude, I'm so stoked. He's like, I guarantee I'm more excited than you right now. And so him and my sister and my nieces came down to the results after, you know, it was all said and done. And so that was pretty fun to have that moment with all of them. Pretty cool. pretty cool, the experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. That Calcutta, there's a lot of money in that too, right? I mean, and how far down do they pay that out? I mean, they sell every single team, right? Like every single team gets sold.
Yep, they sell every team in groups of four, and then or five, I think, depending if it fills up or not. And then I think they pay down maybe 10 spots. This year, the pay wasn't as good as it has been in the past. Just, I think, you know, there's not the luck's not involved. You know, your bottom bouncers and riggers aren't out there thinking, oh yeah, I can compete. I'll buy us, you know, for teams that are going for $1,000 here and there. Instead, they're going for $200-$300. But yeah, I mean, the year we won it, the guys won $24,000 off of us, and they bought us for like $1,200.
They're more money in the Calcutta, investment. You know?
Yeah,
definitely.
They're making bank off of us.
Yeah. I think, you know, I've seen that on all different levels, those Calcutta deals. I love it. I think it's just fun. It's just a fun time, you know, like everybody's always having a good time with all that. But you know, you can definitely judge, and I guess I feel this way, like you can get a vibe for how good the fishing is.
Yeah.
When you look at like what certain teams or what they're willing to buy themselves for or whatever it is, you know. But when it's pretty quiet in the room and, you know, you're not really seeing a lot of like intermediate teams going for a whole lot, my guess is that you weren't the only one that had a little bit of a head scratch in pre-fish, you know?
Yeah, it tells a lot about the week, that's for sure.
Yeah. There's almost like a little bit of a tell there. you know, if you're a poker player, you know, like, you know, you'd know how to handle those situations at times probably, but that's good stuff, man. Dude, that's really, really good stuff. So what do you got left this season?
We wrapped it up last weekend at home water at Hell Creek Tournament, and that was the last one of the year. We got our butt cheeks beat on that one. Yeah, ended up with eighth place out of 43 teams. And
oh, that's pretty good, though. I mean, I know that's not your standard, but...
No, top eight is not what a guy was wanting to end the season on, that's for sure.
I like seeing you. I'm always kind of checking out where Phipps is at, Phipps McFadden. And, you know, your tournament partner there, what's his story again?
So he owns Townsend Marine. And so obviously we get to drive a new Lund every year, which is just the best perk ever. And, I mean, that's my favorite boat. Great. Love fishing out of it. And he's fished tournaments his whole life, or, you know, his uncle got into it whenever he was a kid. And so he's really involved in, you know, he pays for, like, usually pays for half of the adult child entry fees on some circuits. And a lot of the tournaments over on that other circuit, he does a lot of fundraising and donating. And that's pretty cool to see that he's as involved as he is. Just a fun guy. And I mean, that Towns Marine's a great, I mean, we leave for a week fishing and they run the house, and it's pretty impressive what they do and how good they are at what they do.
That's cool. I'm happy for you. And I always appreciate the time. It was cool to get to know you a little bit last time, and it's cool to get caught up this time and see that your hard work is still paying off, man. It's you know, yeah, it's never easy. It's never as easy as you guys make it look. It's like 100, you know, 10 plus pound average on 10 fish over the course of 2 days makes it look like, man, you guys just have, you know, some sort of silver bullet figured out. You've got something that is just so indestructible figured out, that is just so elusive for other folks. And, you know, it's not like a simple explanation like that. You really have to work hard to listen to you talk about it and how that would all unfold. You know, in a tournament day of fishing, and to make good on it is just so impressive and, you know, inspiring to me for sure. Not that, you know, in 30 more years from now that I would ever plan on mounting some sort of a tournament career with everything that I could possibly learn from you. But I'm just, you know, when I go fun fishing, especially when I'm by myself, I'm trying to emulate that stuff. You know, I'm trying to think like that too, just because I want to catch a bigger fish. I want to be more consistent catching bigger fish, and that always means catching less fish, and it definitely takes me to new places that, you know, if I wasn't trying to be like that, I would never fish otherwise. And so there's just a lot to appreciate, but getting the stories from guys like you that are doing it for real, I feel like that's the best source of information. And I just appreciate it a bunch, man. Well, what else, we can wrap this up however you want, man. If you want to shout anybody out, or, you know, if I don't know if you promote your socials or anything like that.
My Facebook is Brem Phipps, obviously. And Instagram, I think, is the same. Grizzly Gutters is the name of my seamless gutter business. And then we got a couple great sponsors this year. The first one was Mid Rivers. Same one as last couple of years. They were willing to pay our entries. And I mean, what a huge relief that is to be able to just go fish and not worry about, like, well, I got to at least make $500, you know, off this thing to pay for our entries or pay for gas. And that's just like, no one ever realized how big of a relief that is. Just knowing, like, all right, I can just go fish and relax. Like, I don't have to worry about cutting a check. Like, we're going for broke here. Like, it's zero or hero right now. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make the most of it. And so that's a huge, huge part of it, is just the being able to go in relaxed and not already stressed about money. And then Townsend Marine, obviously, new boat, you know, they pay for gas, entries on the Montana circuit, and great partner, great company to be able to, for Chris to walk away and them run the ship and his wife and kids to allow that. I mean, not everyone can do that. They've got sports going and his kids are doing rodeo, and I got pretty lucky there. And then I have a girlfriend, actually, Kelsey, and she helped me get a lot closer with God and just kind of building a relationship there and just trusting the process and knowing no matter what, everything happens for a reason and it's going to be however he means for it to be. And so that's been a huge part of the year too. Just, well, you know, whatever happens is meant to happen. It's kind of been the saying, and everything happens for a reason. Like, no matter, you break a fish off, well, it was meant to be that way. You lose one, oh well, we'll get the next one. And so that's been a huge, huge part of it, is just trusting the process and not giving up on it. All right. I'd also like to thank my mom and dad. Mom actually spent Mother's Day this year on the boat helping me pre-fish for a tournament. And we had a great time. And I don't know very many, very many moms that are that selfless and willing to give that up for their sons. And then my dad, obviously I sold my boat this spring and he kept his, and he's building a house right now. And so I have been using his boat every chance I can get, and using his gear, rods, baits, everything I can steal out of his boat. And he's just letting me, and that's incredible. And once again, Andy and Sam Rose, they've let me use their boats a couple times, pick me up. We go pre-fishing and just bouncing ideas off each other, giving us a place to stay. And I mean, none of this is possible without those guys. And it's just pretty, pretty humbling to have friends like that and people in your life that are willing to do that for you.
That's beautiful, man. Well, I'll let you go for real, Brem. I'll let you go for real this time, dude. And like I said, we'll stay in touch.